Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined as always by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how are you doing today?
What's going on? I thought I was doing okay. The sun's shining, the birds are singing. I'm in my little grief hole at the end of the garden doing this podcast and got very greasy hair. I've not been in the shower yet. What an absolute stink boy. Sorry, Chris. I'm turning up looking like an absolute load of rubbish for you. And also, as you can hear, my voice is in no kind of state either.
Oh, no. you've got kind of a sleazy hair back look going on, like a gangster. Who's rubbed some fried chicken through his hair. But other than that, you look great. Cheers, mate. Dear. So we made some theories in the podcast last week that Branson would get back and that England would prevail. One of those came true. And I'm sure, like me, you were delighted that Richard Branson got back safe and sound to offset some of the not-so-good news that England didn't win.
The continuation of the hurt. I think if you ask most people, would we miss Richard Branson if he wasn't necessary? I'm not just, look, pay your taxes and people will like you more. But like, I mean, like, would you rather England coming home? Look, it's not for me to say. I think if England could have won and Richard Branson had come back, Seven Sound, that would have been cracking. One of those things happened, as you said. Chris was unbelievably worried about predicting that Richard Branson was going to come back alive. I'd say it's fine. He's been tested. Look, he either does it now or he does it in a few weeks after Jeff Bezos. So I didn't realise that Jeff Bezos's craft is going a little bit higher and Richard Branson's one didn't quite get as high, which is amusing. I would very much like to compare and contrast the two views both unlovable billionaires have of the Earth from above. That's what I want to see.
I mean, I've been fascinated by it all. It's true, yeah. The Jeff Bezos's rocket goes, I think, 100 kilometers, which is the Kármán line, which is internationally recognized as the point where sort of space begins as you leave the Earth's atmosphere. Whereas Richard Branson went, I think, 80 kilometers, not quite as high, but it's still recognized in the US as space. NASA recognized that as the point where space begins. And to be fair, both of those points are, I think, completely more or less past the Earth's atmosphere, like 99%. Mm. Beyond the Earth's atmosphere. So it's technically space, but Jeff Bezos did like a tweet, or his company Blue Origin, like, our company gets you 10 miles higher and we're better. Do you really want to fly Virgin Galactic? And it got a little bit ridiculous, throwing shade. It was quite fun. I watched it. And for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, Richard Branson, Virgin Galactic, he got in a little rocket that goes up on a plane to, I think, 40, 50,000 feet. Then the rocket, which is sort of being held onto this plane, drops down. A rocket ignites and it launches, goes from 0 to 3,000 miles per hour in like 10 seconds or something ridiculous. And after just 1 minute at that speed, they are in space. And I was worried though. I did watch it live and I was worried that the whole thing was just going to go up in flames. There was a moment of worry and fear. I don't know how I feel about Richard Branson. I've always sort of, growing up, I thought, he's an amazing entrepreneur, he's brilliant. But then as you peel back the layers, he's done some pretty tax-avoiding stuff over the years. He's most of his businesses have failed. I think only one or two of his businesses have succeeded and sort of subsidized everything else.
Only need a couple, mate. Only need a couple.
But he's got a book called Losing My Virginity, right? And it's very clever. He's a very clever man. He loves using the word virgin and virginity a lot, and he throws it around. But he paints his picture of this sort of buccaneering champion of the people, and how he did so well because everyone loves him and he's brilliant. But there's a much better book by a guy called Tom Bauer, who did a biography on Richard Branson, and it's more like an expose, and it kind of exposes the really kind of evil shit, sociopathic stuff that Richard Branson did to get to that point. Because let's face it, you don't become a billionaire without treading on a few people along the way, and he certainly did. And in a weird way, I kind of had more respect for him after reading the book, because I saw the decisions he had to make and the ruthlessness that he had to show to get to that point. Whereas his book, it just sort of makes it seem like, oh, I woke up and I thought, let's have an airline, and then I had an airline, and then I thought, let's have some Virgin Coca-Cola, let's take them on. And then I had a company. Like, you just, it's all a load of bollocks. Whereas this book, which is just called Branson, it just sort of shoots him down a lot. But I don't know. I admire what he's done. It's not a rags to riches story. Like, he had quite wealthy parents. He did do some pretty dodgy tax stuff in the 60s and 70s with his record company. But thankfully, his rich, wealthy parents, I think his dad's a barrister, was able to remortgage the house and bail him out, which is something 99% of the population can't do. So he was kind of lucky in that regard. So I don't know, I could talk about Branson all day. Whether you love him or hate him, I guess it's still impressive that his company's finally gone to space after 17 years of waiting, given that it started in 2004. And he's kind of been saying every year since then, oh, yeah, it's going to be next year. So it's kind of surreal to see it. And for $250,000, Pete, you can ride it as well, Virgin Galactic. When are you doing it?
I'll be saving up all the money I've saved by not going to Japan every year for the next 5 years. So,
at least 20 trips to Japan, isn't it? In terms of.
Yeah, pretty much.
What would you rather have, though? Be in space for 3 minutes or come to Japan 20 times?
I'd probably like to go to Japan for 20 times. You know, just because that is like space, isn't it? It's like traveling to space.
It is. Fair play. All right, we've got a story this week that simply headlined Road Rage in Tokyo. A car with a male fashion model gets attacked by a man with a crowbar. Wonderful, wonderful. A story of violence. We don't get that many violent stories on the podcast. It's always someone missed their train or lost their wallet. So
yeah, hopefully pretty chill country, really, in many ways.
It is, isn't it? It's the trouble with Japan. The story is always kind of like nice. Like, oh, I lost my wallet and woe was me. I found it 10 minutes later. By the police who had it. Never any much worse than that. All right, let's see if this one is any interesting. We've got Dear Chris and Pete San, I hope you're both doing exceptionally well. Bram here from Antwerp in Belgium. Been a fan of your work for quite a while, and I wanted to share with you a very unsettling experience I had in Tokyo about a decade ago. In the fall of 2010, I was fortunate enough to go to Tokyo for 3 months as a fashion model. Oh, glamorous. During the weekdays, I was being driven around Tokyo from customer to customer for castings by a wonderfully wacky driver, Nobuhiko-san. Usually, we were 4 to 6 foreign male models in the car at any given time, which, as you can imagine, was quite intense and loud. Sounds like something out of Zoolander. On a late afternoon in my second week in Tokyo, we were driving in Ginza, an upmarket district in Tokyo, to an important customer when we got stuck in a narrow street. A small van blocked the passage in front of us for quite a while, which highly irritated Nobu-san. Why we were going to be late for our appointment, and this would be a big issue for both Nobu and for us, since the customer would be highly offended. When the owner of the van, a man in his 40s in a suit, appeared, Nobu-san all of a sudden started shouting at the guy out of frustration. All I could understand was "hitakuso," which is an offensive slur comparable to "you fucking asshole." The driver seemingly ignored Nobu-san, got in the car, and started driving onwards. At the end of the narrow street, we unwillingly followed the van in the same direction and stopped behind him at a traffic light at a bit further down the road. Oh, this is always really awkward when this happens as a driver, where you have like some awkward moment with another driver, like they pull in front of you, you beep, and then you sort of end up being stuck behind them moments later at a traffic light. And then, this is where the story takes a turn for the worse. At that moment, stuck behind him in the traffic lights, something unimaginable happened. All of a sudden, the driver stepped out of his car, took a crowbar out of his trunk, an actual metal crowbar, starting to sound like Half-Life here. Nobu, he started running towards the right-hand side of our car and smashed the headlight with his crowbar whilst yelling loudly at Nobu and all of us. When he threatened to smash in the front window, Nobu-san and all the guys in the car freaked out like hell. Nobu hastily drove the car on the opposite lane of his right side in order to escape from this madman. While we almost hit the guy during our escape, he managed to smash the window in the back, narrowly missing the head of a Dutch model who was looking through the window. Nobu continued driving through a red light in order to get away. We luckily didn't hit any other cars. We had managed to escape safely. All the guys in the car were baffled by what just happened and full of adrenaline, as you can imagine. In the end, nobody actually got hurt. We only got covered with glass from the window. But what on earth happened to us? Of course, we didn't go to the customer and just drove back to the modelling agency. Later on, Nobu got interrogated by the police in order to identify the culprit, but we never heard back from them on this case. My question to you guys is, what is your guess about the identity of the culprit? Was it a Yakuza member who needed to blow off some steam, or a frustrated salaryman who had a very crap day? Have you ever had this kind of road rage incident in Japan? Keep up the great work, lads. Lots of love from Belgium. Bram from Belgium. Good God. What do you make of that, Pete? Yakuza,
like
Gordon
idea
Freeman.
Of a,
who was it?
I like the idea of a sexy van full of sexy boys getting attacked by a man with a crowbar. Take that, sexy boys.
I mean, yeah, four or five models in a car being attacked by a crowbar. Would you have taken them down?
Mate, look, if I'm a sexy passion model, my face is my business, and I'm not putting my face in any peril for Nobu or anyone else, to be quite frank. I'm looking after myself, looking after numero uno, number one, Ichiban Donaldson. The face is my business, and business is good. I'm running for the hills. I'm getting out of the way. I'm getting out of Dodge, mate.
Driving for the hills. Thank God Nobu got them out of there quickly. I reckon it must have been like a Yakuza guy. Like, who the fuck has a crowbar like that in their boot, the car, like the trunk? They just whip out. That's not normal.
It's a pretty adequate kind of lockpick, I suppose. I've got to take I bought a cupboard when we moved house. It's just arrived. It's too big for the hole it was going in. I measured the wall rather than the skirting board, so I'm gonna have to peel off a skirting board this afternoon, and I'm gonna need a crowbar. So this afternoon, I'm gonna pop out the DIY shop and grab myself a little bit of crowbar action.
Just need to tell the right person to go fuck themselves, and they'll bring the crowbar to you. It seems.
Yes, good exactly.
God. I mean, in Ginza, they do. So Ginza's like really upmarket district. What's it comparable to in the US or the UK, do you think? Like Beverly
Fair,
Hills?
I don't know, maybe? Like Savile Row or something. I don't know. Somewhere Savile fancy. I guess Kensington. I'm trying to think where all the shops are, the nice shops are.
Probably I think
like
Mayfair.
Chelsea,
in London.
Yeah, Mayfair, right.
Yeah. So it's home to the most prestigious and expensive hostess clubs, right? The place where women pour your drinks and tell you you're brilliant over and over for thousands of dollars. And, you know, I've met people that have spent upwards of like $10,000 a night in these sort of hostess clubs, because they'll be like, who wants champagne? And then you've got to look big and rich and brilliant in there, and you throw money around and whatnot. So these places are often operated by folks like the Yakuza. So if it was in one of those districts, it could well have been someone, a manager, Yakuza member who manages a district or manages a few shops. He was coming home after a long day, got shouted at and thought, fuck this, I'm not taking this, and crowbarred the hell out of old Nobu. That's my theory. I don't think it's a salary man who lost his temper. But there was we've had a few stories over the last year about road rage. I remember there was a guy in Chiba who like nearly ran someone off a road or Saitama. There's a lot of road rage in the greater Tokyo area. I've been lucky over the years. I don't think I've ever experienced road rage in Japan, just elderly drivers who are just terrifying. They will kill you. Their driving is reckless, and they'll pull out in front of you for no reason. Shame.
But we've talked about the mental health provisions in Japan before, and you know, people losing their mind on the roads. I imagine happens more often than not. Even though it's a society that obviously values respect and not getting in your neighbour's grill needlessly.
Yeah, exactly. Dear oh dear. Well, we've got a new story this week. It's a bit more upbeat. This week, a Super Mario 64 game sold for a record $1.5 million. $1.5 million for a Super Mario game, right? A sealed mint condition copy of a video game, Super Mario 64, sold at auction for $1.5 million, making it the most expensive video game ever sold. The game cartridge, dating from 1996, was in high demand at US auction house Heritage Auctions for its historical significance, rarity, and condition. Apparently, there's fewer than five copies in such good condition. I don't believe that, though, because I've been to so many places in Japan where, like, video game shops that all the games look immaculate. Do you really think there's five copies?
I think it'll be a certain release. There might be a certain, like, quite an early release on the N64. I think you'd be surprised, though. Like, yeah, you'll see it in you'll see it in beautiful condition, but they won't necessarily be sealed from, like, factory sealed when it was actually bought in the first place. It's weird to sort of now be seeing video games that are going on sale for that amount of money that are like, the generation of the N64, the polygons. I've seen loads of like NES kind of really rare boxes and stuff. But then you sort of go, well, I mean, Mario 64, such a popular game. It's not like it's not a rarity. Mm. It's not a prototype. It's not like anything that you couldn't get anywhere else. So it is quite, it does seem like it's got a really weirdly inflated quality. But it was one of those... It's one of those games that have actually been rated by, I think, a Japanese company that do ratings of this, like, these beautifully well-conditioned, well-kept games. They have, like, a scoring system, and this one scored, like, a 9.8 out of 10. The thing that made me giggle was, I think Luke Plunkett in Kotaku, I think it was Luke, wrote about, today, a copy of Oblivion, the video game Oblivion, the Elder Scrolls Oblivion game. That's obviously been on every fucking video game format possible. On like an original Xbox 360 version that went for $600. I find that more egregious because it's Xbox $600. Yeah, it was a good looking quality. It's a good quality looking version of Oblivion, but it's Oblivion on the Xbox 360, a game that everyone had, and it's only 10 years old, and it went for $600. I don't know who was buying this bollocks, but they are.
I mean, the whole kind of market is overheating in the world of collecting things at the moment, both physical and non-fungible. Mm. Like, I'm sure you're familiar with NFTs and folks selling artwork. And the Pokemon cards, they've back with a vengeance. Mainly a lot of them is due to folks like Logan Paul, and a lot of influencers are snapping them up and whatnot. Like, I think the rarest Pokemon card in the world just sold for £150,000.
That's insane.
I can't believe Pokemon cards are still a thing. I used to love Pokemon cards in like 1998. But now,
I've got no answer for why it's. I mean, I guess the old video game Pokemon. I mean, to be honest, I heard your I heard you on Trash Taste talking about Apex Legends with
C-Dub,
Connor, and the rest of them, and they treated you like the oldest man in the world. So I
felt so old.
I don't think we are the people to answer why Pokemon cards are back.
I mean, I don't get. Yeah, I start to feel really old. Whenever I hang out with Trash Taste and they're like, all these Apex Legends and what is it? Raids?
Yeah, I don't play it. I don't know what it is. I mean, yeah.
Connor.
I'm familiar with it, but I just don't know what you got wrong in that sentence. I have no idea. Watch the episode Trash Taste. It's good.
Is it Raid Shadow Legends or something? One of the games is called.
But like, I don't.
He made
I don't
me
know, man.
In a hotel.
Oh, PUBG guy.
We were in a hotel like a month ago, and he was like, oh, look at this, mate, it's really good, and like put it on the TV, and it's just shit. It's just like three people commentating on someone throwing a sword against a wall, and I was like, this isn't
great.
Give me Super Mario 64 any day. Like, I can see, I mean, Super Mario 64 is a piece of video game history, and I think that is justifiably $1.5 million. Like, that is something I could accept quite wholeheartedly.
I mean, like, sort of arena-based, arena-based kind of combat games are quite interchangeable, I think, from everything from like Overwatch forwards and stuff. I find it very interchangeable and very sort of unlovable. But yeah, I don't play a lot of them. That's probably the problem. But there's very little charm in those worlds for me, I would say.
Fair enough. I mean, it's I don't know how to feel about it all. I don't know. I've had a weird time with video games. I sort of missed the golden era, which is kind of like the 80s and 90s, right? I feel like the 90s was kind of the golden era of video games. Is that accurate? Am I wrong? Was it?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of video game companies that went out of business in the late 80s. So, yeah, I mean, your Sega Genesis's and your Super Nintendo's, your SNES's. That's you'd probably call it the golden age, wouldn't you? I suppose.
I think so. I think so. All I'm thinking, though, is at this point, with all these Pokemon cards, video games going for billions of dollars, I live really close to some bloody fantastic secondhand stores for retro video games and cards. Like, there's the store around the corner, there's Pokemon cards everywhere. They are in Japanese, though, so I don't know how that affects the value. But I keep thinking, wait a minute, maybe I should buy all this stuff, put it in a box, put the box in a cupboard, lock the cupboard, come back to the cupboard in 10 years, and then I could afford a trip on Virgin Galactic with Richard Branson. I want to sell it all inevitably.
What if you lose the box? What if you lose access to the box?
I'll never lose access to the box. Is that the lack of faith you have in me that I would lose access to the box?
Well, you might lose
filled with millions of dollars of video games. But if the most expensive game ever auctioned was Super Mario 64, $1.5 million. The one before was The Legend of Zelda for the Nintendo Entertainment System from 1998, which was just 2 days before went for $870,000. So
blimey.
It's interesting. I wonder why Super Mario did so much better. I guess it was the changing point when video games became truly 3D, right?
64-bit. Yeah, I guess so. It was the superest. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, it was. I think when I first saw Mario 64, I was like, "How is that going to work?" Because Super Mario is very simple, and they just really nailed that control system. And you know, everyone was playing catch up after that by making their own fucking, Tasmanian Devil. Is it Tasmanian Devil? What's that? Crash Bandicoot? Like that kind of thing afterwards.
I thought you were talking about Sonic the Hedgehog at one point, but I think, as I mentioned last week, I'm getting this. I'm hoping to get the studio right around the corner in Sendai, and I'd love to have like a retro game corner there, where I can have like a TV and the cool game set up, have like a PlayStation 5, have the old Nintendo 64, bit of Perfect Dark, and I don't know, just chill out, play video games. Take me back to the 2000s.
How far are you into this new kind of studio adventure? Because obviously all you hear from people trying to rent real estate in Japan is that it's bloody impossible.
It's, I've sort of looked at it and I like it and I want it and I will.
And that's all it takes.
But no, you just got to do the paperwork. And yeah, it's not easy. You've got to pay like 4 months up front of like rent, and that's not cheap. That's a lot of money, so gotta find that money, gotta shake a few piggy banks upside down, gotta sell some abroad Japan memorabilia which doesn't exist. But no, it's kind of at the stage where just sort of got to get approval. It's always a bit dicey as a foreigner as well, so I might have to like get Ryotaro to be like, look, it's a Japanese person. Let's put it under his name, and he's good. Do you see there was a story this week where it was some sort of lift in Tokyo. I think it's the XL Hotel in Akasaka. I've never stayed there. It's above a Hooters. Bit of fun for you there, a bit of knowledge.
Okay.
Above a Hooters, if you like Hooters, which I don't know why anyone does. They're rubbish.
And it's a family restaurant.
I've never got a Hooters. Absolute crap. Luckily, they're all shutting
never
up.
Been. Just Tokyo. Confusing, though.
Yeah, there's like one left now, I think, in Tokyo from a high of 4 or 5. But this hotel, they had like two lifts. One of them was like Japanese only, and the other one was foreigners only. And it caused quite the storm. It was in every newspaper under the sun. And it looked almost like some sort of apartheid scenario. Like foreigners there in that lift, Japanese in this one. But I don't know what their thinking was. I think the aim was, they thought foreigners that are coming from overseas, more like overseas folks that have just come into Japan, go in that lift just to be safe. I'm sure they weren't being too malicious about it, but it just came off as pretty bad and pretty awful. Like, it's funny how...
Imagine, but it would have been white people being kind of going, what? What is happening here? I'm not... this isn't fair. And we've never done anything like this. This isn't fair.
That's how I felt. It's true. I think people love to kick up a fuss about such things. They did relabel it to, what was it? It was like foreigners. They've relabeled it to not foreigners only. It was like foreigners exclusive or something. They changed the word.
Make it sound exclusive. Yeah. Oh, exclusive foreigners lift. Oh, they put exclusive in front. I don't feel so sad about the whole situation.
Yeah, they tried to sort of improve it, but just made it worse. Good old. I don't know what this. Why isn't there any sort of PR person that's like, look, just be careful. What I love is there was just some sort of worker at this hotel who probably just thought, you know, let's have the overseas people coming in from the Olympics, let's put them in a separate lift just to be safe. Mm. They printed those bits of paper out, stuck them on the door. Someone took a photo, bang, the hotel just received millions of dollars of free publicity, albeit the wrong publicity, all because of probably one person who didn't think things through. But yeah, it's always ridiculous. I'm sure they weren't being malicious. Unlike the ramen shop owner last year, he just banned foreigners from coming in altogether because of the old ramen. But yeah. Dear, oh dear.
Oh, well, dear, oh dear. Dear, oh
going to go down there and protest to make a video. We'll be back in a moment with the fax machine with your messages and stories, guys. Back in a moment.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Join me, Jaguar, the host of BBC Introducing Dance on Radio 1, for my brand new podcast, Utopia Talks. It's a reactive platform to discuss issues that my generation care about in dance music culture and the wider world. I'll be talking to some of the biggest names in dance music, including people like Heidi.
The lineups do not need to be 99% male-driven. Mm. There's all these interesting new producers and women that are coming through, you know, all sorts. Yeah. It's like women are speaking out now.
And the sensational Bless Madonna.
I feel like literally my entire life has led up to this. This is the first event we've had like this, not just in the UK, but really in the Western Hemisphere. And to be able to be here with all of these people who are so happy is just absolutely the biggest, highest joy of my life.
As well as having the meaty conversations I often have with friends that I'd love you to join in with.
There's so much new energy coming out of the pandemic, and there's so many like new nights and festivals, and everyone's really pushing for this new structure where people genuinely don't feel anxious about coming to a club night because of the way they look or the way they dress. It's more about everyone in.
To me, Utopia is a perfect moment. It's togetherness. It's the future. I want to live in a more inclusive, equal world, and I hope this podcast will build a community and help create change. Subscribe now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you like to get your podcasts. New episodes dropping every Wednesday. Welcome to Utopia Talks.
Utopia Talks is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
And we're back with the Fax Machine. What do we got this week in the Fax Machine, Mr. Dawson?
If my voice can handle it after screaming at England a couple of nights ago. Hello, Chris and Pete. My name is Mike and I'm from Canada. I've got a question for my favourite YouTuber and my favourite number one Japan enthusiast. I was recently reading a manga where the protagonist lives in a small town in the countryside and a lot of characters end up having some deep and dark secrets. That got me thinking, it's not the first time I see the Japanese countryside portrayed that way in manga and anime. It seems that the smaller rural areas are often associated with concept of close-mindedness, traditionalism, hypocrisy, and a general feel of secrecy and apprehension to outsiders. So my question is, what is the perception of the Japanese countryside from a Japanese lens? Is it positive, negative, neutral? Is it the, like the old plug, the old electric plug? Is it the classic example of city folks looking down on rural folks? Am I only reading manga and watching anime from people who have had a bad trip to a rural town? Thank you for any insights you can provide and keep on with the great content, your podcasts and videos. Make my days. Mike, Chris, do people, you've lived in a small town, you've lived in a spooky little village where literally no one is around during the day because they're all at work. Is it spooky? Do people have secret skeletons in their content, in their cupboards?
Skeletons in their content. It's funny you should say that, actually. I was looking through my wardrobe earlier and I do have a skeleton that I forgot to put in a video. So I will have a skeleton in my content. That's
smashing stuff.
Ties in nicely. I think people in the countryside here are, I think certainly with COVID, it's made you realise that they feel very detached from the city. Like in Natsuki's town of Sakata, if you're A, foreign, or B, someone who's just come from a city, they're a bit on the edge at the moment. They're not, they're kind of like, oh God, is this person bringing the plague with them? Are they going to come and ruin my shop? You know, and I can understand it a little bit, you know, out in the countryside, you can obliterate your business if you catch COVID or, you know, one of your customers bring it with them. But I do feel, I mean, I love the rural area in Japan. I just spent the last few days in Akita and Aomori in North Japan. And they did a very good job clinging to their traditions up there. You kind of feel like the real, I hate the phrase, the real Japan. But it's the real Japan, Pete. The real Japan.
It's the real
They've
Japan.
Got shrines and weird demon things. Like in Akita, we focused on the Namahage kind of demons of Oga Peninsula. It's kind of ironic, actually. The peninsula is called Ogre, like O-G-A, Ogre. And the local mascot, or the local demon, they are ogres called Namahage. And that's just a complete coincidence. How cool is that? And how did I only just realise that? Weird. Ogre Peninsula. But, yeah, I love the countryside. I feel like people are more shy out there, of course, but it's where you're going to get the most authentic experience. I don't think they look down on city people. And in fact, most people in those rural areas, they go and live in Tokyo or Sendai or a big city for a few years. They do their sort of 9-to-5 in an office, and then many of them move back. So they don't look down on people in cities, but I think they're relieved they're not there. They're relieved that they're back in the countryside. And I can't blame them, really. Having been to many Japanese cities, I'd much rather live in the rural countryside. It's a much better standard of life, right? What do you think?
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, I can only speak from my relationship with my own hometown, which is very, not rural.
Don't bring Harley Potter
sort of town, sort of. I'm a bit of a townie, really. But yeah, I guess I don't look down at people who stuck around Hartlepool. It's a great little town. It's just no jobs. It's just no bloody jobs.
Yeah. And that's the same for the Japanese countryside, unfortunately. And that's why, when most people I know who came here as English teachers, when they finish their time, they end up, like 90% of them, moving to Tokyo. It's a real shame. It's a real shame, I think, because they do benefit from having foreign folks like me turn up and walk around with a camera, be a dickhead.
The benefit.
We got one here. The benefit.
Chris Brown.
There is no benefit. What am I on about? We got one here from Aman. It says, hey, Chris and Pete, I'm Aman from India, and I've been consuming the Abroad Japan content for a couple of years now. I've been a massive anime and manga fan since childhood, and I've gotten more into the culture through YouTube. I've observed through your videos and anime and manga how the Japanese people are obsessed with the English language. Most of their products have some English words written on them, but when it comes to speaking the language, not many people are able to do it. I always wondered why. They teach English in schools, and they even bring people from other nations to teach English. And they certainly want to do it, so it's not from a lack of intent or trying. But what are your views on that? Thank you for the content, guys. Keep up the good work. Regards, Aman. I mean, that ties in nicely with what we were just saying. What do you think, Pete? Why aren't they good at English? What's going on?
Why are they good at English? Like a lot of decorative English, it's all about giving your product or book or writings a little a veneer of respectability. Mm. And, you know, it just sounds cool, doesn't it? It's like it's like the English versions of Americanisms. We don't necessarily need them to communicate, but saying things like cool or cowabunga or skateboard.
Cowabunga. It's not the 90s anymore, Pete.
It sounds
bloody
cool.
Hell.
All right, mate, Apex Legends, whatever
Apex
it is.
Apex Raid of Shadows.
But, but yeah, I guess it's all just, it's not important for them to communicate in English, but English gives it a veneer of a feeling of the other, the kind of exoticness of using English. I think it's fair to say.
Well, I think the assumption is it's prestigious because the company has lots of marketing budget and it must be a big company if it's written in English. That's the sort of idea behind it. And certainly Natsuki's been drenching his products, his homemade products, in English that I have to painstakingly correct every day. Every other day, it's like, I want to call my face cream Wonder Gel. Does that sound good, Chris? And I'm like, oh, don't know if
probably
that's
not
a good idea, Natsuki. So I just like, just put Japanese on it, mate. But I mean, in terms of English, in the countryside, they don't really need English, let's face it. I was in about as much of a rural location as you can get in Japan, and it was an uphill struggle. I had 2,000 students, and about 10 of them actually seemed to be interested in learning English any given time. And at first I was frustrated, but I also understood, and I had to sympathise and empathise a bit, because I remember when I was at school learning Spanish, and I felt like I didn't really need it at the time. It wasn't really a pressing issue. And out there in the countryside, they don't need it. The only ones that did want to learn it were the ones that had lived or travelled outside of Japan for a bit and sort of been exposed to the world outside Japan. But there were some changes when I was there. Certainly, I think midway through my years teaching, they changed the curriculum. So they finally integrated a bit on conversation and actually speaking speaking English, because they just didn't have that. It was always like reading and writing. And that's not the fun bit in English. The fun bit is being able to speak to the slightly grumpy British guy that walks around your school all day munching on chicken. Like, you want to go up to him and talk to him, don't you?
Yeah, you want to experience that guy's life.
That's what you want. But I don't know. I feel like it can be a bit of a collective joke at times. Like, they just sort of joke about English a lot, and I don't know. I don't think they necessarily need it, but they do need to find ways of making teaching English more effective, because students just sit in the classroom for hours and on end, and don't learn anything. I think that's a shame. I think it's a real shame. And I used to spend a lot of my time as a teacher trying to motivate them, and being, rather than necessarily teaching them grammar, just sort of listing out reasons why learning English is good, you know, like you can watch Abroad in Japan. That's the important bit. Exactly. It's the main thing. The teaching was just a front to encourage my students to promote Abroad in Japan. We all know that. We got one from Jody, Pete. Over to you.
Got a quick one from Jordy. Hi, guys. Long time listener to the podcast and watcher of the YouTube channel. You helped us plan our honeymoon to Japan in 2019, and we absolutely fell in love with the country. This story is not about that, though. I know most people listen to the podcast on their commute or while doing general housework. I wonder if you've been involved in anyone else's big life events. Your great podcast kept me sane during the most stressful and unnerving day of my life so far. While I was walking up and down an empty ward 9 months pregnant, trying to get the baby moving and out, she was apparently far too comfortable. Imagine that. You're stressed out. You're about to experience the worst pain of your goddamn short life, and you are listening to me and Chris are disgracefully pedestrian tones in your ears. Wow. The ward was eerily quiet as I was on my own. My husband was not allowed in with me because of COVID, so it was me, myself, and I. The midwife would pop her head in occasionally, though. I did have a number of back episodes to listen to, though. I listened to about 20 of your podcasts that day, and there was still no sign of the baby. Our baby girl finally appeared after I'd been in hospital for nearly 24 hours, and you guys were with me through most of that journey, apart from when I ended up in the operating theatre. Oh, Geordie. Unfortunately, she's not been named after either of you. However, her two favourite stuffed teddies have both been named Chris Woofer Broad and Pete Doggleson.
That's my new name. We both listen.
Oh, awesome. Pete Doggleson and Chris Woofer Broad. we both listen to you now when we're going on walks or driving in the car. I figured our little Tali is your youngest listener at 6.5 months old. Oh, we better cut down on the swearing. Little Tali's going to learn some little words. We can't wait to start planning our next trip to Japan so we can show the amazing country. Keep up the great work, guys, and thanks for keeping me sane during that lonely stint in hospital. Geordie. What an honour.
Wow.
I would very much like to see these two stuffed teddies, please. I mean, I presume they're she says teddies, but they seem to have a dog element to them. So, like, dog teddies, I don't really...
a teddy bear, dog...
Yeah, very, very... dog mix.
I would stop at nothing to see a photo of Pete Doggleton. That is amazing.
Yes, that's true. That's... Me too.
I love the way this. The first thing the baby might have heard is just coming out and just hearing... me being like, oh, I want to get some chicken, but I can't bother to get out of my apartment. Oh, you know, I love chicken. Like, is that the first thing a baby deserves to hear?
I think it is.
Yes,
I think it's exactly what it deserves.
That's incredible, though. Like, we joke, but that's very moving. So thank you for that, Jody, and I hope you're doing well with your baby. And I do get messages occasionally from folks who are like, I'm getting married and I'd love you and Natsuki to come, or I've got our honeymoon at this location because of somewhere you shouted out, or, you know, we do get really nice, powerful emails, not only on the podcast, but on Abroad in Japan. And it's nice. Like, again, doing the podcast, Pete and I sit in a room at opposite ends of the world. We talk about things and hundreds of thousands of people listen every month around the world. And same with Abroad in Japan. I sit in a room and whinge about things. I wanted some chicken. I like chicken. That's the Abroad in Japan channel. And it's just me in a room whinging about things, and 300 million people have watched it. And so when you hear stories like this, it makes you realise how lucky you are to do it, and very grateful for it. And also Pete Doggleton. It's made my fucking day. It's made my
certainly
day.
Certainly worries me. Jada. Certainly worries that people are listening to this nonsense.
Let me listen to it again.
Wednesday.
If you have a kid, Pete, I've played the podcast to them as well. And there's a little bit of Pete Doggleton in us all. But for now, guys, keep the stories, questions, comments coming into Abroad Japan Podcast at gmail.com. We'll be back to do it all over again next week. I'm still laughing at Doggleton. And no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, have a great week. And we'll see you right back here on the podcast all over again on Thursday or Sunday. I don't know what day it is anymore. That's what happens when you're laughing at Doggleton.
We'll see you on Sunday night, 10 PM UK time, baby.
Japan is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.